You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to Phillies Backstage. I'm Tom Burgoyne, joined by John Brazier. John, we're loving spring training. We're still down here. I guess this is our last podcast of the spring until the team comes back home north.
Well, in our last podcast with Jim Salisbury, it was I had gotten down on Friday night, and it was Saturday when we did it with Jim, right? So spring training, that was the first game of spring training down here. Now we've been here for, what, 10 or so days, and we got to watch some of these young guys, and it's been fun camp. I mean, we signed, obviously, Castellanos. We weren't even allowed to talk about Schwarber or Castellanos, so we had to say reported. So now we can say it's official. And tell you what, they both were recording this on Monday during the game, and already Schwarber and Castellanos hit the home run. And, you know, it's been a fun spring. A lot of the young guys, Mickey Moniak, you know, three games in a row for him with home runs. Some of these young kids. So it's really fun. But what's really fun, Tom, is that we got to spend time with Chad Durbin, right, last week.
That's right.
And now we get to spend time with our old buddy, Michael Bourne.
Yeah, on the broadcast crew. Welcome back, Michael.
Thank you for having me. I'm happy to be back, fellas. It's a wonderful time. This is where everything started for me as far as pro baseball. And I couldn't have been joined into a better organization.
Nice. I would definitely say that. Love to hear it. Now, when you were drafted, this ballpark was just being built. So, but then you did get a little taste of this ballpark when you were with the Phillies.
And, yes. Right? Yeah. Well, I did, not as a player coming through the minor leagues, though. Only in spring training. I skipped high A. So I was able to go straight to double A. That's never a bad thing. So I was happy about that. But this organization was always fun. Back then it was Arbuckle, Norwita, Dancy, you know, all the old heads that was out there. But hey, I'm telling you, when you're talking baseball, I couldn't have picked a better organization.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because a lot of people, because you came up in this organization and you played for, you know, at least five or six organizations, right? Yeah. And nothing to take away from the other organizations, but I know talking to a lot of guys when they get traded away, and if they were drafted by the Phillies and developed by the Phillies, and they get traded away, they didn't realize how much what they had here, and they'll come back and say, you know what? I didn't know how good I had it.
100%. Like, one thing I noticed about the Phillies that I will say, it was very family oriented. My mother and father just had this conversation with me the other day, and my mother, I go on there and said that she said that's the one thing she remembered. You know, she remembered how they accommodated her when I won the player of the year in the minor leagues, and they brought her down, and she was just overwhelmed, and she just loved the joy. And we just talked about this in her kitchen like a week ago, and I said, Mama, because I told her the first, I'm like, man, they were very family oriented. I don't know if y'all remember, they had a ball before at the end of spring training back then.
Yes. Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, the owner's party, they called it.
Yes, the owner's party. And to me, that was a big deal. You know, like, for a young player coming up, and you going in there, and you see everybody that you looking up to, and you kind of in spring training with, and you seeing this, and I never seen that again. Like you said, we didn't do that in any other organization. And I love Houston. I'm biased with Houston because that's my hometown, of course. But when it comes to that kind of stuff, I was like, wow.
Yeah, it's a family-run organization, you know, the Bucks and the Middletons, the owners. But even going back, you know, Bill Giles' family and then Dave Montgomery, it really is you're buying into a family. You're not part of a corporate, you know, entity,
no.
Which is great about this organization.
Yeah, and you mentioned Houston, Michael. I totally remember now when we made the trade, you know. And it was 2007, and, you know, we were getting Brad Lidge, but we were given, you know, I hate to say giving up on Michael, but it was like, oh, you know, like you were a, you know, one of those building block guys.
Yes,
but you know, the Phillies, of course, they were
ready to win.
They were ready to win. Yeah. Exactly right.
So for me, in that situation, I was a young player at that time.
Mm-hmm.
But to be a young player, I understood what was going on. Like, at that time, they needed a closer. Brett Myers was the closer the year before, which he really was a starter, but they used him in the closer's role.
Yep.
They didn't have a closer. Brad Lidge had been a solid closer year in and year out, and I have to say, the trade worked. He didn't blow one save the next year.
He didn't blow one save.
Not one save. Yeah. And I went on to have a good career in Houston. Yeah. That first year was tough for me, but other than that, it was fun. But I understood, you know, you got to think about it. At that time, you had Jimmy Rollins leading off, Shane hitting second, Chase hitting third, Howard hitting fourth, Pat hitting fifth. I'm a left-handed hitter. Shane and Jimmy are top of the guys hitter, but they were switch hitters. So that can make it a four lefties in a row or two righties and two lefties in a row. So you got to think about that. I'm a straight lefty hitter. So it would have been, for me, it would have been a different fit. And I understood that. You know, I would have loved to stay here, though, because I love the way it was done. I knew they were ready to win, but, hey, you know, you got to do what you got to do. It's a business at sometimes, and that was part of the business.
Yeah, and you were going back home, though, too, which must have been really cool for you.
Oh, it
was. Was that, I mean, were you tickets for everybody at the games, or was there a little extra pressure on you? I mean, you know.
You said something that was very important. It was a little extra pressure when I first got there. I put it on myself because I wanted to perform so well. And I still remember when I got the call. I was at a friend's house playing NBA Live on a PlayStation. And, you know, I seen a Pennsylvania number call, and I'm like, I know in Pennsylvania that's calling me. So I didn't even answer the phone at first. They called me back like 2 minutes later, and it was Ruben Amaro Jr. And I was like, whoa. I was like, what's going on, Ruben? Why is he calling me? You know, he said, well, I just want you to know we just traded for you. You're going home to Houston, and we traded for you for Brad Lidge. I mean, I was in total shock. Right. I was not expecting it. I walk in my friend's house, because I go outside to talk, and I go back in. They can look at my face like, man, what happened to you? Like, I'm coming home to play in Houston. They was like, what? They start jumping around the apartment.
That's wild.
Yeah, it was wild. Then I called my mother and father, and they were ecstatic, and it was a great time for me, you know. And it was one of those things where I knew my career was starting to take off a little bit.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, the interesting thing, too, so let's go back. Can we go back to his childhood? Because I want to delve into his playing, too. So, but going back to your childhood, you grew up in Houston, as we mentioned. I didn't realize your Little League teammate, you know who his Little League teammate was?
No.
Carl Crawford.
Is that right?
You got Carl Crawford and Michael Bourne on the same Little League team.
Yeah, that's
how good of a Little League team was that?
We won 5 state championships.
Yeah, pretty good.
So my dad has discovered Carl, and he played for the Salvation Army. So they weren't very good at the time. It was a black team that didn't have a lot of organization. Like, some people be wearing shorts, some people wearing pants, you know, same, not the same jersey. But my daddy found him. He was going to look at another team that we had to play in district. So, and they were playing against the Salvation Army. My daddy came back home, and he was like, Mike, I think I found us a new player. Oh. And that's how it was started. I was like, really? He was like, yeah, you play for the Salvation Army. I said, really? He was like, yeah. And next thing you know, he used to come over to the house all the time. He stayed at our house a week at a time. We'd go drop him back off, go pick him up. But he was one of the most dedicated and superb athletes that I knew coming up. He played all three.
Well, I was going to say, and you both played outfield in the majors, but what did you guys, obviously, literally, you guys were probably the pitchers and shortstop, right?
Yeah, I played short. He played first because he was left-handed.
Okay.
So, you know, he couldn't play in the infield and second, short, and third. But he pitched too. I pitched too. And we also, so when we went to state back then, you also got to pick up three players from another team. Jason Bourgeois, he also played on our team, a big leaguer as well. Now he's in the Dodgers organization, being a coach and a rover. So at some times we had three big leaguers on our team in Little League.
Jeez, dominating.
That's amazing. What are you?
Well, and how, you know, I knew you got drafted by the Astros like right out of high school, what, 2000. And how hard was it to say no to that?
So for me at that time, I just had this conversation actually. I felt like I got drafted in the 19th round, right? So it wasn't a lot of money that was being offered to me. But if y'all remember back then in the draft, they had a draft and follow. So back then they had it where if you get drafted, if you go to junior college, they still own your rights. But if you go to a Division I college, the rights are taken away from you. So what I did was I sat down with my parents, and my daddy made me make a grown man decision at 17 years old. And I was like, man, I don't know what to do. But I decided to go to college because at that time, to be honest with you, I probably had played from 9th grade to 12th grade, I probably played more basketball than I did baseball. I was more on the basketball court. And so for me, going into pro ball is different, not just on the field, It's off the field too. You're 17. You're gonna be on your own. All that kind of stuff. Which I wasn't really worried about that part. I was more worried about like how would I develop. And I felt like college would be a better route for me. It worked out. I would have been with Houston coming up. I got to come over here to the Phillies, and I love it.
John, if you got drafted, okay, you went to high school and you got drafted by the Phillies.
Yes. Can I just say yes?
Exactly.
In the 98th round?
Yes.
Mr. Insignificant,
is that what they call it?
And a $500 bonus? Yes. I'm in.
$500.
Just so I can tell people.
Right? Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Awesome.
It was fun times, though. It was. Yeah. I had a great time, but I felt like I made the right decision.
Yep. But you went to Houston then for, well, you went to Galveston, right? Or is it?
I was going to Galveston, but I ended up going to University of Houston.
Okay, so you never went to Galveston.
Never went.
And then you went 3 years and got drafted after your junior year.
Yes, I did.
Right.
Yes, I got drafted my junior year. Do you know the name Charlie Carbell? Because he was a coach at Galveston, but he was also in the Marlins organization. So I got to see him again later on. But yes, I ended up going to college. Played 3 years there, drafted in the fourth round.
Fourth round, yep.
Then came here to the Phillies.
And did you know anything about Philadelphia when you got drafted?
Zero.
Had you never been to the city?
Nope, didn't know anything.
Did you have any, what was your preconception?
I only knew one thing about Philadelphia.
Cheese sticks.
And that was Allen Iverson.
Iverson, there it is. Okay. Right.
I thought that's why I was growing up in basketball.
Really?
Oh, okay. Yeah, I loved that.
So you're a little guard, shorter guard.
Following him from Georgetown to Philly. Hey, man, he was my man. Oh, yeah. That was the dude for me, man. Still to this day,
Ever meet AI when you were playing?
I never met him.
You never did?
I never met him, no. I didn't. Nope, not one time.
Well, we're going to have to arrange that.
I'm with it. I definitely want to meet Allen Iverson. That's one of my favorite players, man. I mean, you know, as a kid growing up, everybody, you know, back then it was Jordan and Allen Iverson, but I still remember when Allen Iverson got him on the top of the key and got the crossover going, wah, wah,
yeah,
and got him. You know, that was, hey, I loved it, man.
When he got the guy, was it Tyronn Lue?
He stepped over, right?
In the
crossover against Jordan early in his career, like his rookie year, crossover, you know.
Yeah, they took that crossover away from him. That's how I learned the crossover from him.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, I learned that basketball was my thing. So I'll put it out there. If the Philly fans, if y'all can arrange that, I would love to meet.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Allen.
We'll make it happen.
Yeah,
I got some buddies over the Sixers organization. We'll make that happen.
Let's do it, man. I am all the way with that.
So then you go through our minor league system, and then what I think is really interesting is that you get United States was qualifying for the Olympics, right? So you take a break when you're still haven't made the major league roster yet. You take a break to go play in a qualifying tournament. And Tom, what does he do? Now, Michael, we saw his career, right?
Yeah.
Fast, great fielder, you know, hitter. You know, but he wasn't known for his power, right?
Yeah.
What did he hit? Two home runs in the gold medal game.
The gold medal game.
How did you know that? You tell us some stats that people don't even know.
And that was against Cuba, too, right?
There you go,
Cuba.
Man. Know about that. I like
Cuba.
That. You're putting on some great stats.
Thanks, Mike.
Yeah. So I'll tell you a funny story about that, right? So we are in, I think, Orlando or Miami. We're training, right? And one of the coaches at the time with the Phillies, I can't remember his name. He was with me. And he comes to me. He's like, Mike, be on alert. They might be calling you up. I'm like, all right, cool. All right. So then he comes later on. We're in the hotel. He's like, get your stuff packed. I think it's happening. I get a call to my room. Bam, I'm going to Chicago, right? So I get to Chicago. I'm going to Chicago. We get there. I get there around about 9. So I get all the way to the airport. I get to Wrigley. They got it blocked off because by the time I get there, the game is almost over with, pretty much. And then as I'm getting out the cab can't stop right in front of on the street at Wrigley. I have to go all the way down and around. I'm carrying three bags. I got three big bags, two suitcase bags, and my Phillies bag on my back, trying to get through. Frank, the traveling secretary.
Frank Kupfmaier,
yeah. He sees me. Michael. So he gets me. He helps me get the bag. I mean, my arms are tired. I'm walking all the way through. You know, the crowd is let out now, too.
Yeah.
I'm coming through the crowd, everything, and I get down there. He was like, yeah, Charlie wants to see you. I was like, oh, okay, cool. So I go in the office. I say hello to a couple of players. Go to the office and he's like, hey, do you want to know the good news or the bad news? I'm like, the bad news. We just traded for somebody while you were in there. I said, oh, my goodness. So I said, what's the good news? Well, you get 7-7. It's 7 days of pay and 7 days of being in the big league. So lo and behold, I got to go all the way back the next morning. I don't even get to play. I don't get to do anything. Huh. And it just happened like that. But from there, I went to – because I had the option – also, because if I went to Cuba, I wouldn't get called up right at the September because, you know, we stayed over there for a week longer. But I'm glad I did that. Hmm. That was a great stat. And I started slow over there the first four games. Man, I could not get going. And all of a sudden, I started right. clicking. And I started going.
And Michael, I've done a lot of traveling. And I've been around the international teams at times. You know, there was a tournament in Japan and Australia, down the Caribbean. I always thought that the rest of the world took those international competitions more seriously than the big leaguers, right? The American guys. You know, so was there a little, I mean, did you have a little fire to beat the Cubans?
Man,
I
hope. At first, you know what happened? I'm going to tell you what lit our fires. We got down there, you know, we thought we were just going to run through the thing, to be honest.
Right.
When we first got down, like he hit it right on the head. We get down there, we playing, we win the first game. Second game, we lose. Hmm. I think it was double elimination, right? And we lose. So they pull us, you know, they pull us together and tell us, hey, man, like, y'all need to wake. I don't know if I could say something. They told us to wake up, basically.
Yeah,
you
right.
know what I mean? And we was like, man, all right. So it got serious for us. And right there, that's what turned the key for us. And I tell you, when we played Cuba, you know, we were looking forward to it because we made it all the way through and we made it to the game against Cuba. We looking forward to this game.
Yeah.
And we had some former big leaguers on that team. Billy Butler was on that team.
Okay.
Do you remember Brandon Wood? I don't know if you remember him, shortstop with the Angels, a big-time prospect. We had a few big leaguers on that team. But anyways, as we get to the Cuba game, we get to the game, start by 7 o'clock. Sun hadn't went down yet all the way. We get there, it's probably about 4,000 people there. It's not a lot of people there yet. By the bottom of the first, it was 35,000 people.
Wow. Yeah, look at that.
It filled up with more than 30 buses. They just came in, mm-hmm. and they started running around the stadium and filling it up. It was an unbelievable experience.
So my grandfather is Cuban, right? Came over, got educated in the United States, and ended up staying here. I've never been to Cuba. My mom had her honeymoon there. What was Cuba like back? Now, this is 2006. No, when? What year was this?
2006.
Right. 2006. What was? Did you get a chance to see Cuba at all, or did you pretty much go to the hotel or to the stadium?
No, some of it we did. Some of it we got to walk around a little bit, but we always had to have bodyguards everywhere we went, pretty much.
Right.
But I got to walk around actually after we won it. We went to what they were selling little stuff a little bit. We walked on the street a little bit after we won it.
Yep.
They were very accommodating to us, actually.
Okay.
You know, except when we beat them, the whole fans.
Yeah, right.
That international team is big in Cuba.
It's big in Cuba. Yes, it is. They were mad at us, but the people around us were very nice.
Yeah.
I enjoyed my experience there. I'm glad I got to go. I wouldn't take it back for nothing. If you tell me I can go to the big leagues on September 1st and go play for that USA team, I'm going to play for that USA team 100 times.
How about the food? Did you try any Cuban food over there?
I did. We ate the way they had it placed out for us. I think we had the great meals over there.
Okay.
They spoiled us over there. So it was good, man. We enjoyed it. They had blocked off a little space for us to party after we won, and we had a great, great time. I'll tell you a funny story. So when we first got there, you know, we have rooms that we're supposed to stay in. No lie. Like, we're staying in, like, rooms that are, like, 6x8 rooms. And
right.
I looked at my room, and I'm like, man, I don't know about this, right. man. And
you're sleeping below the sink.
Oh, man.
Dirt floors.
All of a sudden, all of us come downstairs. We're like, man, how your room is? They're like, man, I can't stand it. Everybody was like, we couldn't stand it. So all the coaches finally got us accommodated, and they put us in this lavish hotel room. I mean, it was nice.
Yeah,
it was A1. We was good, and I enjoyed that experience. I'm surprised that you know that. I am very surprised.
Yeah. John does his research.
I do my research.
That's very impressive. Not too many people know that. I promise you. I promise you a lot of people don't know that.
Yeah, but so it was really cool. And then obviously your career, great career. You led this league in stolen bases for 2 years, right?
Three years.
And one of those years you led Major League Baseball in stolen bases.
Yes.
I mean, that's got to be, you know, a lot of pride, obviously, doing that, you know, because you weren't just you were an all-around player, obviously.
Yes.
But when you lead a whole league or even the whole entire league, mm-hmm. I mean, that's really impressive, right? That had to have been a point of pride for you.
Thank you. Yes, it was impressive. I was thankful that I put in the hard work. Well, first off, I want to give credit to one person I really think that taught me how to steal bases on another level. I know how to steal them coming through the minor leagues, but when I got here and I got in touch with David Lopes,
yep.
and we got one-on-one to work, that was like a jump start to my stolen base career to another level. Like, he really taught me how to stay low, how to read pitchers, what counts to go on. Shout out to David Lopes. I haven't talked to him in a while, but man, this man is one of the best. When it's talking about the art of base stealing, I don't think anybody knows it better. And I'm going to tell you why, because he told me when he played, he wasn't the fastest, but he knew how to get good reads, knew how to get good jumps, and knew when to go. And man, he was something else to me.
So is it a lot of things then? You just mentioned, you know, you basically got to read the pitcher. You got to read the count. You got to, you know.
I studied it all. I studied how good a catcher can throw, how quick he was, how good his arm was, you know, stuff like that. If the pitcher had a good pickoff move, if he was slow to home play. It's a lot of stuff that goes into it, but you have to do your homework. And he was the one that taught me all that.
Are lefties harder in general just because they're looking at you kind of? Or they're facing you?
I learned a little trick. Later on that I wish I'd have known early on. I'll tell you when we get off air. That's
okay.
Real important.
All right.
that you could teach.
Well, what do you think in today's game, Michael? It just seems like the stolen base has been devalued. I mean, do you agree with that? Or
I do not agree with it.
I totally agree with you.
I do not agree with it. And I hope that all 30 teams go get somebody that's faster or just as fast as me or that can steal bases. And I think it brings electricity to the stadium. You know, it's just not
sure.
about a stolen base, but you want the electricity in the stadium. I don't know if y'all watched the they have a Lakers Showtime thing.
Yeah. I've been watching it.
And Magic was not just the player. It's the energy he brought and the way that he played that made the Lakers Showtime. Shout out to Jerry Buss, man. I have to give that, man. He was one magnificent owner.
Yeah.
Did you see the first series?
I did. I saw the first episode. That's all I've seen.
I've not seen it. Tom was talking about it before.
Very impressive owner. I have a lot of respect for that man. That man really, really was a pioneer in sports, you know, and I have to say that. But I think the electricity that it brings, you know, for me watching Jose Reyes, Carl Crawford before me, and Kenny Lofton, those type, Ricky Henderson, Vince Coleman, mm-hmm. those kind of players, they were electric, man.
Were those your favorite players growing up? Like, did you gravitate towards those type players that you became that type of player, but did you gravitate towards that, or were you more...
No, I wasn't. But I'll go on air to say this. Now, Ricky Henderson was the all-time base leader for his steals, right? But to me, who had the best first step was Vince Coleman.
Vince Coleman.
That's who I thought had the best first step.
Right. Mm.
Ricky had more opportunity because he had a great eye. He could get on more. And he was fast. But if you ask me, Vince Coleman, speed for speed, I'll take Vince Coleman, running-wise. I'm telling you. I've never met him, but I watched a lot of film on him. And his first step... Wow.
Did you ever meet Ricky?
I did. I had a conversation with Ricky.
Is that right?
Yeah. I didn't understand what he was telling me.
did he talk about himself in the first person?
Yeah. Third person.
Third person. Well, Ricky said.
Yes.
He did a little bit. But he's a cool dude. But we only talked for a little while. But, man, he's a cool dude, man. He talks fast, though, you know. So we talked a little bit. But Ricky is Ricky.
Yeah.
He's a Hall of Famer. All-around player, had power, speed. In today's game, he'll be a $250, $300 million player.
Right,
you know,
yeah.
So he's definitely – I got to talk to Kenny Lofton a lot. Another one that would be $100 million, $200 million player.
We had Kenny Lofton as an affiliate. Yeah,
I know. I was here when they had –
That's
had,
right, yeah, yeah,
yeah. I was here, you know. So we talked then. We talked when I played in Cleveland a little bit. And, you know, he's a great, great player too. But you asked me first step, I think it's Vince Coleman.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
And, you know, we've come so far away because right now it looks like Kyle Schwarber is going to, you know, might be our leadoff guy. And it's, you know, not the prototypical, lightning fast guy at the top of the lineup.
I agree. I think it'll come back around, though. Mm-hmm. I think the game comes full circle. You go through phases of different games. Basketball is changing, too. Football is, too. But, I mean, I think it just goes, you know, full circle. And mm-hmm. I think it'll come back around to where I think, because that's most of those are like athletes, me, myself, D. Gordon, Carl, like those, we were just true athletes, and we could do a lot on the base path. And I just think that art is missing in the game. You know, I think especially when you're playing playoff baseball, that's when it really shows up. And you want to, I play to win the game. That's the only way I knew how to play it. You know, I loved. Now, don't take me away. I love the home run ball too, because you need it. I just think that you need all facets of the game.
Well, also you're putting pressure. If you have a strong running game or a threat of a strong running game, you're putting pressure on that pitcher.
Yes.
So not only is his mind is now starting to think about you stealing the base, and that might, because he's more preoccupied with you at first base, then he might not be as vested into the hitter because he's got too many thoughts in his head.
Such a great point.
Right.
I mean, that's amazing. That's exactly. It's not even the stolen base act, just the threat of it that's in the pitcher's head. And by him doing that, he can't concentrate. I don't know too many men that can concentrate on two things at one time.
That's so. True.
He's best friends with the Fanatic, and yeah. I don't think the Fanatic can
what do
concentrate
you say,
on
the
two
lights
things.
On? The
wheel is spinning with the hamster's dead.
Yeah, with the Fanatic. Yeah, that's for sure.
It's very tough. I know I can't do it. It's one thing at one time. And I just feel like, you know, I really hope that it comes back.
Yeah.
That's just my prayer on it.
Well, switching gears a little bit, you got this great new radio job. Have you had a chance to look at what the Phillies have done and the lineup? And what do you think of the club this year?
So I have a little bit. I've been mm-hmm. looking at it. I know they added Schwarber and they added Castellanos. I got to see Castellanos play a lot in Detroit when I was coming up with, when I was with Cleveland. He was just coming up, but he's evolved into another kind of hitter. So is Schwarber. You know, he went on a tear last year.
He
home
did.
Runs. And to be honest with you, that park can be made for that because of, you know, it's built the way it's built. You know, they got a short right field, short left field. Center is a little bit deep, but to the left and right, you know, you play it how it played. And with Bryce Harper in the lineup, I'll tell you a sleeper, I think, and I hope I'm right on this pick, is Gene Segura. I played with him, and I feel like he's a bat-to-ball contact person that I really like, you know. And hopefully he gets at the top of the lineup at some point, because I remember seeing him, and, man, he was so electric when we played in Arizona. And, I mean, this kid, he was our starter. I was in second at that time, and, I mean, he was electric. But I think they can do a lot of damage, you know. I know they have some pretty good pitch, and I like their starter. Bullpen is always what you lean on to me. When I was playing Atlanta and how Kansas City did it, when they won it, that was a very good thing. Even the Dodgers, when they won it, they had good bullpens. When you had a good bullpen, you take some pressure off the starters sometime, and it makes the game shorter.
And the bullpen's always kind of an unknown, too. You might 100%. Know the closer if you have Rivera, or if you have like a Hoffman. You know, that's what you know you're getting there. But for the most part, the bullpens can fluctuate from year to year, right?
Exactly.
So we got Familia, we got Hand, you know, we got Knable, and we're just hoping that we get the best versus of all three.
And some of these young guys, John, even today, a Sheriff was pitching today. Sometimes you see these young guys in spring training, and it looks like they're lights out, you know, and I really think we've struck out a few, you know, a couple of years in a row with our relief pitching, some of our younger guys coming up through the system, but I really think, there's some guys who can really throw. Of course, you know, Coonrod and Brogdon are going to be there, but some of these other guys, I think, are going to help us out.
I got a question for both of y'all. Do y'all like veteran relievers or young relievers?
It's a good question because, the veteran relievers, you know, because they have, obviously, the guile, I guess is the right word, that they have the experience to try to, you know, get out of situations. Young guys, you don't know the track record, obviously, but if you get a young guy that like Sir Anthony Dominguez, who I think is going to be a big part of this bullpen. I mean, people are forgetting. You know, they're concentrating on Hand, Familia, and Knable, and they're thinking about some of the young guys you mentioned, Coonrod, Brogdon, Alvarado. But if Sir Anthony comes back, and he's, you know, been real good so far, you know, that could be almost the free agent pitcher. He's not technically a free agent, obviously. But, you know, people forgot about him because he was hurt, right? He's out for a couple of years. So someone like when he first came up, like that's the young pitcher.
Like that,
they don't, the other teams don't have the book on the on those young pitchers, right?
True.
Where they have the book on the other guys, but the other guys have the book on them, right? But it's the young guys that, you know, they're again the wild card. So sometimes you get a guy that, that is lights out in the very beginning.
Yes. Michael, I like veteran pitchers who are good. I don't like those veteran guys who stink.
Very profound, Tom.
Yeah.
Very profound.
I like that. I like that. That's why I have to ask, because he hit it on the nose. That was on the nose to me, because, okay, you got a veteran that's been in that situation. So, you know, in that big situation, his nerves are calm, but the most part, he's been there. But then, like, you got that young kid. He might have the 101, but now it's the eighth inning with a one out and the man on second. Can he get out of that jam? You know, it can be tricky sometimes. But that was a good.
Now your first manager was Charlie.
Yes.
Right. Now we love Charlie. Obviously, Charlie's down here. One of my favorite human beings on this earth right now, and I can say that he's every time I see him, I get
Charlie first, wife second, Michael. That's
sorry,
what we're talking about. Jill.
Sorry, Jill. Right.
I'll
put Jill and my mom and my daughter just above Charlie.
I'm about to say, you better. You're going to be in trouble.
Maybe my siblings, too. I'll put my siblings there. But other than that, all right. But Charlie, love Charlie. What was your experience with Charlie like?
So, to be honest with you, my experience with Charlie started when I was in low A. So, before he got
hired
as a manager, he was a special assistant, I think, or something in that role with the Phillies. And he used to come down and travel. Me and him would talk. He would talk to me about Manny Ramirez, Jim Tomey, how he had him.
Albert Bell.
I mean, all that. And you know what he asked me one time? He said, you would love to play for me, wouldn't you? I said, I sure would. And lo and behold, it happened.
Yeah.
You know? And I think that for me, he was one of the best managers I played for. Not just because I knew him before, but how he managed the game.
Yeah.
He knew how to, you know, he could take the pressure too. He didn't mind it. He didn't care about all of the fans, hooting, whatever they had to do. And he knew what he was doing. He still talked to J-Roll and Howard and all them today. You know why? Because they have respect for him.
Yep.
You know, and that's the thing about him. That, like you said, he's one of my favorite players. And I'm going to favorite managers. I'm going to tell you one thing that he knows better than anything to me is hitting.
Oh, yeah.
He knows hitting inside and out.
Yes, he does.
So any of you Philly players or any young players see him around, please go talk to him.
And he'll talk to you. He'll talk to anybody.
Yeah. Me too. Hey, I just go talk to him. That's the thing I think that's missed sometimes. People don't take advantage of people like that. Yeah. Go sit down and talk to him for 15 minutes. You might learn something that's very key in your approach or your mechanics in hitting. And he'll talk about it, like you said, all day long.
And he's a total character that you probably never heard this story, but this is a good one. Charlie, probably back then when he was kind of, before he became the manager, he was kind of a super scout, right? He was and one time he had a long day scouting. I think he was down in Florida. He had a condo. So he's a long day scouting. He goes to dinner, comes back from dinner. It's kind of late night, long day, right? He's tired. And he's by himself, and he goes into his condo. He opens the door. It's pitch black. He's got the lights off, right? And next thing you know, he hears this loud, like crazy gargling noise, like loud. And he hears crashing, like this lamp crashing, everything. He's sitting there. He's going to walk in on someone burglarizing his house, right, or his condo. He turns on the light. A pelican he left his sliding glass door open, and a pelican had come into the condo and was bouncing around the room trying to get out. And Charlie realized it was a pelican, and now he's got a bigger problem. Like, now he's got to get the pelican out. So they had an umbrella stand right next to the door, and he grabbed an umbrella. If there was a video, of that, my God, that would be probably the greatest video in the history of videos. And he was basically fighting the pelican, trying to, you know, poke the pelican. You know,
that would definitely be a meme to them. Definitely.
Condo, and he did get it out.
He
did.
Charlie Manuel, one of the best dudes that I played for, and man, I hope I run into him while I'm down here.
You should. I mean, he's around.
Yeah, he's around.
Yeah.
Awesome. You're fired up about this radio gig, right, Michael? What are you going to do, about 20 to 25 games, something like that?
Yeah, 20 to 25 games. I am fired up about it. I want to, you know, I'll be on the road with the Phillies doing radio. First time doing radio, but I'm enjoying it. learn the team. I'm just excited to see the games again, you know, be in the atmosphere of them playing. I know,
and I feel bad because we're hardly going to see Michael, John, because it's like, I know with Franson, it's like he was always on the road. We never saw him, and, you know, when you guys are working the road, I don't know how much we'll see you, but do you know what cities you're going to?
I know I'm going to Washington, I think, I want to say, no, that's the only one I know is Washington.
Okay.
I remember looking at that one. I was supposed to do the first opening series in Houston, but they got pushed back, so I'll be doing it at the end. But that's the only two I
did. And I think it's going to be cool, too, because it's, you know, four guys, and you guys all are bringing something different to the table. You got a pitcher, right, in Durbin. You got a guy who's more the veteran infielder in Stocker. You got a guy, catcher, the catching perspective from Kratz. And you come up with the outfield and the speed component of the game.
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to be a really interesting year.
It will be. We all, like you said, we all bring different perspectives of the game, you know, and see how it breaks down. You know, a lot of people think I like outfield and that just base running, but I like hitting.
Right.
It wasn't
pigeonholing you.
No, you're not pigeonholing me at all. But I love it. I love breaking down the whole game as a whole. You know, I would always walk around to different teammates and ask them different mechanics of what they're doing as far as infield work, footwork, you know, pitching. Mm-hmm. Like, what are you thinking up there? What are you trying to get yourself out of? How do you feel? Just different stuff you have to ask to learn your teammates, personalities, you know, who likes to be in the clutch situation, who doesn't, you know. You'll be surprised, though. Mm-hmm. You'll be very surprised on who likes it and who doesn't, you know, who likes to get up and sometimes you have early workers, sometimes you have late workers, who likes to lift weights early, who likes to lift weights. It's a whole bunch of components that I used to like to ask to just learn the game and learn the person.
Now, do you have a social media presence?
I don't. I have zero social media.
But you probably will now, right?
I know. People are telling me they've been trying to get me to get on social media.
You're getting a breakdown. You're going to give in.
They're trying to get me to get on Instagram for the last 7 years. I'm I don't want to do it. They're like, come on, Mike, you got to get on there.
Yeah.
I'm like, but no.
and we were talking earlier, you've got three kids, right? You got two girls and a boy.
Yes. Shout out to my wife, Nikita. Shout out to my son, Bryson. Shout out to my daughters, Blair and Bailey.
Okay. And the ages are, they range from?
12 to 3.
Okay.
Oh, boy.
The 3 is the worst. I don't know who made her. Golly, this girl is. I bet you right now she's causing havoc at the house if she's at home. I promise you. She is a. Whew. As soon as she's able to get in sports, I'm putting in it. The day. Make her run. All her energy.
Well, you know what? Get her into swimming. My daughter swims, and they're so tired after their practice because all they do is lap, 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 lap. So if you teach her how to swim, she'll be knocked out and you're good to go.
That's what I'm going for. I'm going for the swimming.
Honey, we just found a sport for her.
Yep, we're going to sign up for swimming. As soon as I get home, get her into it.
I'm telling you, my daughter does 100 laps, if not more, in a practice, and she's dead tired when she gets out of there.
That's impressive.
Yeah, and then they also get little, you know, strong little bodies, you know what I mean, from all the swimming. So
with threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
I don't know if we told you, Michael, but we have a quiz. I've been working on it. It's about your life. You have 8 questions, right? And again, you should get it. Inside Tracks, it's about you.
I haven't taken a test since 2003.
Well, I think you're going to do great. And Tom, if he gets 6 out of 8? Right? 6 out of 8. What is he? He hasn't seen the Fanatic in a long time. Can he get an autographed picture from the Fanatic? Can he get a Fanatic doll or something Fanatics related?
He's always messing with me when I was a visiting team. Always.
Yeah. His best friend.
The
green guy.
Don't listen to me.
I think the Fanatic for you, Michael, would always, your name would get called, and he'd always pretend like he's going to steal base, and when he goes to steal, he'd fall flat on his face.
But that's one of the best mascots in sports.
Exactly.
Baseball, in sports.
Nice.
All right, well, you're going to win something Fanatic related if you get 6 out of 8.
All right, 6 out of 8. You need 6 out of 8, Michael.
All right,
come
here
on
we
now.
Go.
Let's go.
All right, you went to Chester W. Nimitz Senior High School, right?
Yes, sir.
Which of these celebrities did not go to Nimitz High School? I'm gonna name 4 celebrities.
Got you.
Right?
Which one did not go?
3 went there, 1 did not. Tell me who did not.
Got you.
A, Brittany Griner, the WNBA star and Olympic champion, who's unfortunately over in Russia right now, can't get out.
Hope she gets out. Shout out, Brittany. We're praying for you, Brittany.
We are. So, B, rapper Mike Jones, who had the hit Still Tippin'. Alfonso Ribeiro, who played Carlton Banks from Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. And former Eagles wide receiver Josh Huff. So was it Brittany Griner, Mike Jones, Carlton Banks, or Josh Huff?
That's pretty easy. I can tell you, that's Carlton Banks. He only fit that profile to be over there with.
There you are. See, you are one for one.
I'm one for one. Shout out to Brittany. Shout out to Josh. Shout out to Mike Jones.
Do you know all them?
Yes.
Yeah.
See, I don't know Mike Jones personally, but he's from Houston, so I know who he is.
Okay.
Shout out to Mike Jones.
See, right there. All right. Now, you also, as we mentioned, went to University of Houston.
Yes, sir.
So the same thing. Which of these celebs did not go to University of Houston? I'm going to give you four people. Three went there. One did not.
Let's go.
PGA golfer Freddie Couples is A. Actor Samuel L. Jackson, B. C is 12-time All-Star Elvin Hayes. And D is Grammy Award-winning singer Lizzo. So it's Freddie Couples, Samuel L. Jackson, Elvin Hayes, or Lizzo.
I'm a limited. I know Lizzo is from Houston. She moved to Minnesota. I know Elvin Hayes went there. I'm going to go... I think Couples went. So I'm going to go Samuel Jackson.
He's two for two.
Nice. Good deduction there. That was
two
good deduction.
For two.
You know, in tests, you got to use process of elimination. Yeah, yeah, I was one of those kind of kids. Like, I don't really know this answer, but I know that ain't it. I ain't know that ain't it. I'm going to choose
exactly
out of these two.
Right.
And on the SATs, when in doubt, just go C.
Yeah,
there it is.
Yes, sir.
Exactly right. Don't listen to the fanatic
don't listen
on
to me.
SAT
don't
advice.
Don't listen to me, Bryce, because you got the SAT coming up. And don't listen to me. You better study, son.
And, yeah, kids out there, do not take the advice of the fanatic. Right? Do your homework. Don't pick C. All right. Now, question three. You were drafted in the fourth round in the 2003 draft following your junior year. And your first team, professional team, was the Batavia Muck Dogs.
Yes.
Remember that? Class A, short season, New York Penn League. Which of these people was not a teammate on that team? So I'm going to name three teammates. One was not a teammate.
Okay.
Tell me who was not the teammate.
Okay.
It's a fake name, obviously. All right. Jake Blaylock, Joe Diffenderfer, Javon Moran, or Jameson Hall?
Shout out Javon Moran. Shout out Jake Blaylock. I know them. I'm going to go with the last one.
Jameson Hall is our traveling secretary, who you'll soon get to know.
You'll get to know him well.
And he's just three doors down. Yeah.
I think I met him. I just don't remember his name, so I was right.
So you got that
right.
Yes,
you're
right.
Three for three.
You got to go process of elimination.
Right. You got it. All right. Number four. We mentioned you played on Team USA in the 2006 Olympic qualifying tournament in Havana, Cuba. And we mentioned you hit two home runs to the gold medal game. Which of these players was not a teammate? Okay, so three were teammates on this team, right? One was not, okay? Randy Wolf, Kurt Suzuki, Mark Reynolds, Zach Segovia.
Oh, that's got to end. I know Randy Wolf couldn't have been my team.
Wolfie, I think he was in double A.
He's a little old.
All right. Four for four, man. You're doing great. All right. Number five, you led the National League in stolen bases from 2009 to 2011. We mentioned you led all of Major League Baseball in 2011. Who led the National League in stolen bases in 2008? So, in other words, the year before you took over.
Okay.
Okay, in the National League. Was it Scott Pesednik, Willie Tavares, Jose Reyes, or Juan Pierre?
Ooh-wee.
Scott Pesednik, Willie Tavares.
So it wasn't Scott Pesednik because he played with the White Sox at that time.
Okay, you're eliminating that. Then you got Willie Tavares, Jose Reyes, or Juan Pierre. Who led the National League in 2008?
I'm going to go Jose Reyes.
I got to give you this one stroke. Willie Tavares.
Colorado.
All right, you're still alive.
Yeah, you're still alive.
All right, ready? Question six, July 15th, 2007, if Wikipedia is correct. The Phillies lost to the Cardinals 10-2. Unfortunately, that was the game that was a 10,000th loss in franchise history.
Right.
Yeah, we want to skip over that part.
Yeah.
But the good news is you hit your first home run. Do you remember who you hit it off of? I always want to know. Like,
I do.
Do you even need the?
I do need the names.
Okay.
But I know what you're saying.
All right. So it was either Tom. I always wonder that. I was doing this quiz.
I would remember, John.
I know, but I was doing this quiz in the broadcast room, and Ben Davis. I said, Ben, does everyone know? Is this too easy for Michael? He said, I don't know who I hit mine off.
How about that?
Right. So I was trying to Google it. I couldn't find it. All right. So for you. Adam Wainwright, no, Troy sir. Percival,
nope.
Andy Cavazos.
Right there it is. Yes, sir. Right. I knew it was Andy. I couldn't remember his last name.
What Cavazos. Team was that? St. Louis?
St. Louis Cardinals.
And we played together on the fall league the year before, I think. So when I hit it, I thought I hit it off the end of the bat. I didn't think I hit it good, but it went out.
It went out.
Yep.
All right. Ready? Question number 7. How many teams did you play for? Now, if you played for a team twice, which I know you did.
Yeah.
Right? That only counts once. You know what I mean?
Okay.
So how many teams did you play for? And I'm wondering whether, hopefully I got this right. All right.
So I got it.
A is 5, B is 6, C is 7, and D is 8. Was it 5, 6, 7, or 8?
I'm just going to name them in my head then.
There you go.
Do I have a time limit?
It's a podcast. We got,
Phillies.
Right.
Houston.
Okay.
Atlanta.
Okay.
Cleveland. Then I went back to Atlanta. Arizona. Baltimore.
Bang.
6. Yes, and you
six
are correct.
Is correct.
He qualifies for the Philly Fanatic.
Philly Fanatic autograph.
Something.
Yes, sir.
And now,
right,
to go 7-for-8 and to end on a high note, so last question is, which manager was the Philly Fanatic's most identifiable nemesis over the years? So the manager that he had a beef with, that he had, there was pure rivalry between the Philly Fanatic and this manager. Was it Bobby Cox, Bobby Valentine, Jim Leland, or Tommy Lasorda?
Me personally, if I had to take a guess, I would have to say Bobby Valentine.
That's your guess? Yes. You know what? If you grew up in Philadelphia, you knew, because obviously
it was a little before his time.
Before your time.
Tommy Lasorda.
They had
the Phoenix, no friend of Bobby Valentine's either.
Believe it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you like the Fanatic like Bobby Cox?
He wasn't much of a thing. Bobby Valentine, rubbed the Fanatic the wrong way,
that's
too.
Why
believe
I,
me.
That's what I thought. I see some things he did on TV, I just like, man, it must be Bobby.
And Fanatic's kind of looking forward to seeing Buck Showalter this year too. He's back in the dugout for the Mets. Like, oh, that could get ugly.
But the Fanatic would literally, Tommy Lasorda, did the Nutrisystem commercials, right? And the Fanatic would, one of the Dodgers, we told the story on their podcast before, Steve Sachs, I think, right, would somehow sneak the Tommy Lasorda jersey out of the clubhouse, give it to the Fanatic, say, don't tell them who I, don't tell nobody who you got this from.
Really?
We do it all, yeah. And then he would put the jersey on a dummy and then drag the dummy from the back of his four-wheeler, or he would, do all kinds of
throw it around a little bit. That's comedy, Michael.
Oh, man.
But he would also.
I'm telling you, man, the Fanatic is the.
The best.
Man, I'm telling you.
Better than Orbit. I know you're a Houston guy, but Houston.
One thing about me, I call a spade a spade.
Yep.
I got to give it to the Fanatic.
Philly Fanatic. There you go.
To the Fanatic.
Michael, I hope we see you this year. I know you're going to be on the road a lot, but you got to spend some time at Citizen Bank Park. We hope we see
what?
You.
I got to come.
Yeah.
I got to come.
Yeah.
My son would love to come. He never been in that clubhouse where I first started. And I would love to show him that.
Awesome.
So he's at that age where he wants to come down here with me. I'm like, Bryce, you got to go to school. You can't miss a week of school, son.
Well, you have to come too, but you know why? Because we got to set up a meeting with you and Allen Iverson.
Oh, hey.
Yeah, that's right. True.
I'm definitely coming. Hey, you just call me. I'm there. I'm coming for that, man. I'm coming to see AI. That's automatic for me.
Awesome. Well, good luck with the new gig, Michael. Thanks again for taking the time.
Thank you for having me.
And, John, I guess we're going to sign off.
Sign off, and our next show will be back in Philadelphia.
Yeah, can't wait. And opening day, April 8th, John. It's going to be awesome.
That's right.
Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll see you next time on Philly's Backstage.
Backstage with the Gorillas.